Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, January 26th. New Midland ISD Board President addresses education. The board must take the input from the community and utilize information from educational professionals to make the decisions that will best serve student outcomes. By Stuart Doreen. New Midland ISD Board President Brian Murray took the time to answer some questions from the Reporter-Telegram about being named as the board leader, the state of education in Midland, and other things teaching and learning related. This is the first part of the presentation. MRT. How do you see your role changing as you move from being a board member to being the board president? Murray. First, I appreciate the support of my fellow board members and look forward to the opportunity to lead in setting the agenda for the board's work for the next 2 years. We have recently approved academic goals for the next 3 years, and my role as president to make sure the board's focus is guiding the superintendent in meeting these expectations. Being board president is a big responsibility, and I intend to utilize all the strengths of our current board to be successful. Talk about the dynamic of becoming the new board president at the same time as a new superintendent will be starting. Is there any advantage to that? I feel there is an advantage of becoming the board president at the same time a new superintendent is starting. There is much work to be done to improve the academics in MISD. I feel we are both beginning with a blank slate. I am incredibly excited about the arrival of Dr. Angelica Ramsey. She has an impressive record with academic achievement and will establish a strong foundation from which to improve our student outcomes. Her discussion of her leadership style details inclusion of input from teachers, principals, and her staff. She explained her intention to be on campuses 2 days a week and described her belief that central office is a support mechanism for campuses where the true work is done. I share many of her beliefs and express those opinions during the most recent re-election campaign. In your new role, how can you help unite those with differing opinions about education in Midland, e.g. pro-charter versus no-charter, pro-bond versus no-bond, Lee High School versus Legacy High School? The process of reuniting the community begins with communication and trust building. Our community wants to have a say in their public schools and to be informed about the major decisions that affect their children. We must be better at explaining the issues and informing the community of the facts or options. I believe the first opportunity to gain trust is to start building some academic successes. The second opportunity will come with facilities. The board has already approved a facility study that will help our chief operations officer establish a plan to maintain our current buildings. The board must approve budgets that allocate resources to support both areas. What is the one thing you can implement immediately that will have a positive impact on the culture? The board has an important role of being good listeners. This also applies to the administration. I believe Dr. Ramsey will take 90 to 100 days of listening to the community and the campuses to determine the wants and needs of both. Understanding that the school district is a public service and an institution of higher education sometimes makes decisions hard. The board must take the input from the community and utilize information from educational professionals to make the decisions that will best serve student outcomes. I believe that listening to all interested parties can immediately begin to change the culture of MISD. Based upon the feedback you have received, what are the top two or three concerns of MISD's principals and teachers? How do you begin to address those? I believe the top three on-campus concerns could be classroom size, student attendance, and the struggles with reading. I also feel like principals could use a central office that is focused on supports and not so much on compliance. Classroom size has always been an important topic for me. I truly believe if we could reduce the teacher-to-student ratio, we could make large strides in outcomes. Under the previous administration, I had never heard of attendance being an issue. All three finalists for superintendent identified an attendance weakness in the district. The two suggested solutions were to enforce the attendance policy more stringently and to create attendance goals for each campus with incentives for reaching those goals. I believe the reading problem can be attacked by setting a phonics-based curriculum that will be consistent across the district. Each new teacher would receive the same professional development for this system. Adding reading specialists for elementary schools and reading enrichment classes to the master schedule for secondary schools would help reach at-risk students. Based upon feedback you have received, what are the top two or three concerns of parents and the community? How do you begin to address those? I believe the top three concerns from parents most recently center around academics, safety, and inconsistencies with the MOA. I have already elaborated on the need to improve academics, and I believe we have begun to address that through the hiring of a strong academic leader. I believe we are looking to add more reading specialists, and we are also considering the addition of behavioral interventionists. We have several areas of concern in the secondary level, and we have already begun to address some of those. The district has recently added phone lines to each classroom and the secondary buildings to improve communications, and we have an in-district police force that is constantly reviewing and looking for ways to be better. I believe the Midland Online Academy is a tool that continues to evolve. I agree that we did not get off to a great start, but we have fixed some issues and improved. The ultimate answer is controlling the coronavirus. But in the meantime, we must be consistent with our staffing, bring students who struggle with coursework and attendance back to school, and continue to address issues as they rise. I look forward to the day when all our students, except those who chose to be online, return to the classroom. MMH, Holiday Spike Drawing to an End by Stuart Doreen. Last week, the positivity rate at Midland Health Testing Centers was the lowest since early October. The 16.5% rate also marked the first time in 14 weeks that the rate of those people testing positive dipped below 20%. It was one of many statistics Midland Health is reporting that shows the latest spike may be coming to an end. Midland Health reported Monday morning that there were 170 positive tests last week from 1,033 tests provided. The number of positive tests was the fewest since the week of October 17th, 130. The percentage of those testing positive was the lowest since the week of October 10th, 14.6%. The lack of cases seems to be region-wide. The Department of State Health Services reports that the region that includes Midland and Odessa had the second lowest rate of COVID patients in its hospitals, 9.29% on Sunday. Only the Wichita Falls region is lower, 8.92%. The DSHS also reports the Midland region is one of five statewide. There are 23 total to be under the 15% rate. The last couple of weeks suggest an improving trend, Dr. Larry Wilson stated in an emailed response to the Reporter Telegram. There is an ebb and flow we have witnessed through the course of the pandemic. I suspect we have experienced the holiday spike, and now it is drawing to an end. That ebb and flow includes positive tests at Midland Health sites dropping from 409 during the week over January 9th to 170 last week. The percentage of COVID rooms at MMH fall from 32% as recently as January 4th to 21% Monday and other days last week. The number of cases reported by the Midland Health Department involving Midland County residents dropped to 417 last week. That was 60 less than during the previous week and nearly half the total from January 3rd through the 9th. Midland Health's website also reported 50 active patients in both the critical care and COVID floor units. The percentage of total inpatient rooms occupied also stands at 76%. Which was down from around 90% earlier this month. The message is that things are tenuously trending better. We have gone through several weeks of high numbers for the county and the state, Wilson said. Wilson warned that now is not the time for Midland County residents to let their guard down. He said Midland health officials are just beginning its mass vaccination program at the Horseshoe. Hospital officials have said that the current program would mean the distribution of 5,000 vaccinations a week. We are still in the midst of the pandemic, and the vaccines will not meaningfully move us close to herd immunity for several months, Wilson said. Murray's Deli changes ownership, adds wood-fired brick oven pizzas to menu, by J.C. Lewis. Murray's Deli recently changed ownership, but the new owners, Betsy Wells, Neil Dufford, and Scott Dufford, want Midlanders to know they can expect the same great service and food with some improvements. The restaurant was established in 1984, and they acquired the restaurant in September of 2020. Wells said she had heard a rumor that Murray's Deli was closing. She called the restaurant and asked the owner if that was true, and he said they weren't looking to close, but he would be open to selling. Immediately, I called my business partners, Neil and Scott, and asked would they be interested in doing this, Wells said. Because we're not really restaurant people, or at least haven't been, we decided to look at the numbers and see if it makes sense for us. As well as being business partners, Wells, Neil, and Scott are also family. Scott is Neil's and Wells' father. They have been oil and gas partners for the past 5 to 6 years. Wells is a petroleum engineer, Neil is a landman, and Scott is a geologist. Scott is originally from Ohio, but Wells and Neil were born and raised in Midland. I think we're fortunate to buy a restaurant that Midlanders supported, even throughout the pandemic, and have supported it through all of 2020, Neil said. Neil said curbside pickup that the previous owners had started has been a big part of the business. Customers can order through the app Murray's Deli and Restaurant, built through Chow Now or delivery services like Texas To Go, Favor, and DoorDash. The previous owners really did a lot initially when the pandemic started to make sure that people were secure here, and it's like a family in the kitchen and among the employees, Wells said. The previous owner made sure that their jobs were secure, and we've been able to retain all of the employees. They have kept the current menu the same while retaining all the staff that was working there when ownership changed. While wanting to keep Murray's Deli the same with the same atmosphere, menu, and great service, the Duffords and Wells also have a vision for the restaurant. The trio have already created a back patio, which will have shaded seating built for the summer. We have a spectrum of menu items, Wells said. If someone wants to eat a burger or a yummy sandwich, they can do that, or if they want a salad, that's available. We now have a kids' menu, which was one of the main things since we have kids. I think that was something Murray's was lacking. Neil added that they can't forget about the curly fries. We are going through a new rebranding process, and in our new logo we say, "Eat more curly fries," he said. They really are the best thing. Murray's Deli will soon be adding to the menu with wood-fired brick ovens. The rollout for the pizza menu will be February 4th. Scott has been making wood-fired brick ovens for 10 years at home. The pizza menu will feature 13 specialty pizzas, and customers can also build their own pizza. The Dufford Classic is basically a compilation of all our favorite pizzas, Neil said. It starts with a classic margarita, which is also on the menu, and we add some spice to it with Italian sausage. We make the regular pizza dough and all the sauces, Wells said. The menu will even have the option for cauliflower crust. Pizza will be offered on Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturdays to begin with, she said. Wells said they have also updated the restrooms with fun flamingo and swan wallpaper. And they will be painting the walls of the restaurant and rearranging some artwork while keeping most of it. She said they also are looking at hosting special events on Saturday evenings when the pandemic finally ends. Long term, Wells said they always thought a downtown location would be fun, or at least a second location in the area. That is a ways off, but she said they are open to looking at expanding. Visit online at murraysofmidland.com. That's M-U-R-R-A-Y-S of Midland. or through Instagram at Murray's_Delling. City completes updating cases from November. The Midland Health Department reported Monday that it has completed contacting positive cases from the month of November. For weeks, there had been a void from late November that left overall numbers incomplete. The announcement Monday means fewer cases are deemed unconfirmed, and statistics like those patients that are believed to be recovered are more up to date. The City of Midland reported Monday that the total number of confirmed cases through Friday was 15,197. There was a total of 37 unconfirmed cases from Saturday and Sunday. The number of isolating patients was 1,528, and the number of patients that have recovered is 9,694. The city also reported the death of a male in his 70s. The man passed away at home on January 15th. He is the 214th COVID-19 related death involving a Midland County resident during the pandemic. Fatality briefs from staff reports. A Midland woman is dead after a three-vehicle crash in Martin County, according to the Department of Public Safety. The victim, identified as Tony Place, 56, was pronounced dead at the scene Friday. Troopers responded to a crash on State Highway 349, 8 miles north of Midland in Martin County, at 1:57 p.m. An 18-wheeler and a Hyundai, operated by Place, was traveling north on State Highway 349, side by side. Place was driving in the inside lane. A Buick LaCrosse was traveling south on State Highway 349, and according to DPS, its driver failed to control speed and nearly struck a vehicle making a left turn directly in front of it. The Buick LaCrosse driver then took faulty evasive action and entered the northbound lane, colliding with the Hyundai, pushing it into the 18-wheeler. The driver of the Buick LaCrosse was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with non-incapacitating injuries. The driver of the 18-wheeler was reported uninjured. A 23-year-old Midland woman died early Sunday morning following a one-vehicle accident south of Midland. The accident took place inside Midland County, 3 miles outside the city, when a 2018 Toyota Camry was traveling east of County Road 140, according to Department of Public Safety troopers. Around 2:35 a.m., the driver of the Toyota disregarded a stop sign at the intersection of West County Road 140 and South County Road 1200. He then drove the Camry through the intersection, lost control of the vehicle, and struck a dumpster and fence. One of two passengers, Noemi M. Gomez, 28, of Midland, died at the scene. She was not wearing a seatbelt. The driver, Armando Gonzalez Jr., 26, of Divine, was arrested for intoxication manslaughter and booked into the Midland County Jail.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Vaccine distribution. Russell Myers, president and CEO for MMH, answers questions after a media tour Saturday of the COVID-19 vaccination site at the Midland County Horseshoe. Vaccine information. The Midland Unified Command Team will begin administering COVID-19 vaccine to Phase 1A and 1B individuals this week at the Midland County Horseshoe Backstage Facility by appointment only. If you are in Phases 1A, healthcare workers, or 1B, over 65 and or diagnosed with a chronic disease and have not had COVID-19 in the past 90 days, you can register to get on the list for this distribution and future allocations of the COVID-19 vaccine by visiting midlandhealth.org/vaccine and clicking on the Click to Register button. Detailed information defining the populations included in these phases is available on the above-mentioned website. A phone line is being set up for those without internet access and released at a later date. Once on the waiting list, you will not receive a phone call to be scheduled. You will be assigned an appointment time and date and receive an email or text message with the information needed. For further questions, visit midlandhealth.org/vaccine. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Meetings today: City Council, 10 a.m., Council Chambers, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Avenue. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa. Midland, Odessa gas prices have fallen 1.9 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $2.25 a gallon on Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa are 18.4 cents per gallon higher than a month ago and stand 13.5 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are gas prices on January 25 in Midland, Odessa, going back 10 years. 2020, $2.38 a gallon. 2019, $2.38 a gallon. 2018, $2.45 a gallon. 2017, $2.15 a gallon. 2016, $1.66 a gallon. 2015, $1.96 a gallon. 2014, $3.09 a gallon. 2013, $3.15 a gallon. 2012, $3.30 a gallon. 2011, $3.02 a gallon. Source, GasBuddy.com. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, January 26, the 26th day of 2021. There are 339 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On January 26, 2020, NBA legend Kobe Bryant, his 13-year-old daughter, and seven others were killed when their helicopter plunged into a steep hillside in dense morning fog in Southern California. The former Lakers star was 41. On this date, in 1788, the first European settlers in Australia, led by Captain Arthur Phillip, landed in present-day Sydney. In 1907, Congress passed the Tillman Act, which prohibited corporations from making direct campaign contributions to federal election candidates. In 1960, National Football League team owners chose Pete Rozelle to be the new commissioner, succeeding the late Burt Bell. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy appointed Dr. Janet G. Travell to be his personal physician. She was the first woman to hold the job. In 1962, the United States launched Ranger 3 to land scientific instruments on the moon, but the probe ended up missing its target by more than 22,000 miles. In 1988, the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, Phantom of the Opera, opened at Broadway's Majestic Theater. In 1992, Democratic presidential candidate Bill Clinton, appearing with his wife Hillary on CBS's 60 Minutes, acknowledged causing pain in my marriage, but said past problems were not relevant to the campaign. In 1993, Václav Havel was elected president of the newly formed Czech Republic. In 1994, a scare occurred during a visit to Sydney, Australia, by Britain's Prince Charles, as college student David Kang lunged at the prince, firing two blank shots from a starter's pistol. Kang was later sentenced to 500 hours of community service. In 1998, President Bill Clinton forcefully denied having an affair with a former White House intern, telling reporters, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky." In 2005, a U.S. Marine helicopter crashed in western Iraq, killing 30 Marines and a Navy medic aboard. A man parked his SUV on railroad tracks in Glendale, California, setting off a crash of two commuter trains that killed 11 people. The SUV's driver, Juan Alvarez, was convicted of murder and sentenced to 11 consecutive life terms. In 2009, Nadia Suleiman gave birth at Kaiser Permanente Bellflower Medical Center in California to six boys and two girls. Criticism came after the public learned that the unemployed single mother had gotten pregnant with the octuplets and six elder children through in vitro fertilization. 10 years ago, speaking in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, President Barack Obama campaigned vigorously for his revamped economic message, warning that other countries were grasping for first place in the global marketplace as the U.S. fell down on the job. Afghan President Hamid Karzai swore in the country's new parliament, marking the end of a drawn-out battle over whether the lawmakers would be able to start work despite ongoing investigations into electoral fraud. Today's birthdays. Actor-comedian talk show host Ellen DeGeneres is 63. Hockey Hall of Famer Wayne Gretzky is 60. Cartoonist Jules Pfeiffer is 92. Sportscaster actor Bob Uecker is 86. Actor Scott Glenn is 82. Singer Jean Knight is 78. Activist Angela Davis is 77. Actor Richard Portnow is 74. Rock musician Corky Laing Mountain is 73. Alt-country singer-songwriter Lucinda Williams is 68. Source, Associated Press.
Opinion Extra. Be patient, your time to receive the vaccine is coming. It appears Midland Health is bringing vaccines to the masses inside Midland County. The Reporter Telegram was at the Horseshoe Complex on Friday to see where residents of Midland County and elsewhere will be able to get their vaccines. All totaled, 5,000 vaccines will be given out weekly, we are told. Please don't just show up to the complex and say, "Where is my vaccine?" There is a process. It involves Phase 1A, healthcare workers, and 1B, individuals over 65 and or diagnosed with a chronic disease, registering to get on the list for this distribution and future allocations of the COVID-19 vaccine. Those eligible can go to midlandhealth.org/vaccine and click on the Click to Register button. Detailed information defining the populations included in these phases is available on the above-mentioned website. Once on the waiting list, you will not receive a phone call to be scheduled. You will be assigned an appointment time and date and receive an email or text message with the information needed. I have to admit I have been taken back by the commentary that there was an expectation that a much larger percentage of the population would have been covered by now. Actually, I am blown away by the agenda that many have pushed by insinuating that officials have been irresponsible and how they handled the rollout up to this point. On the contrary, Midland Health officials have been clear that this was not going to happen overnight. My expectation personally was that I wasn't going to receive my vaccine until the summer at the earliest. And if I don't receive my shots by then, I am comfortable knowing that my life won't be impacted much. I can still go to places of my choosing, wearing my mask and taking part in protocols that have been emphasized by Midland Health leaders. I again credit Russell Myers and Dr. Larry Wilson for staying on point about what Midland County residents should be doing to protect themselves and others. They have avoided the politics that others have felt free to participate in, typically at no benefit of the community. I also credit responsible Midlanders for responding to the message. The Midland region has the second lowest percentage of COVID patients filling up beds of any region across the state. Only the Midland and Wichita regions are showing percentages lower than 10%. Reminder, the lower percentage of people testing for COVID, the fewer COVID patients filling up rooms at Midland Memorial, and ultimately the fewer people possibly dying because of COVID are things our community has control of. Please continue with the mask wearing and other protocols that can help keep you and others safe. Your time is coming. Midland County has a population of around 176,000, according to the latest census population estimate in 2019. Once a person starts to add up others from surrounding counties who will come to Midland, the number of weeks really will start to add up. However, our health care leaders will continue to communicate with us. One can also contact their own doctor to find out other opportunities for vaccines. In the end, here's hoping everyone who wants their vaccine doses gets them. But at the same time, please be patient. Stuart Doreen, online, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HEARSTNP.com. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, January 26. Christopher Paul Dominguez, 49, passed away on Thursday, January 21st in Midland. He was born in Odessa. He is survived by his father, Hilario Lon Dominguez, and wife, Janie, sisters Debbie Dominguez and husband, Corey, and Gino Dominguez Nanez and husband, Adam. A niece and nephews, several great-nephews and nieces. His aunts, Esther Rodriguez and husband, Polo, Delma Avila and husband, Ricardo, Annie Pierce and husband, Jimmy, Bertha Ramos and husband, Abud, Rosie Vitolos and husband, Alex, Mary Rios, uncles Crispin Dominguez Jr. and wife, Donna, Jimmy Sanchez and wife, Lupi. He is preceded in death by his mother, Eva Sanchez Dominguez, paternal grandparents, Crespin and Irene Dominguez, and maternal grandparents, Julio and Manuela Sanchez. Uncles and aunts. Viewing and funeral services will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Viewing will be held Tuesday, January 26th from 10 a.m. until 9 p.m. Funeral services will be held on Wednesday, January 27th at 10 p.m. with burial immediately following at Rest Haven Memorial Cemetery. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. David Evans, 43, of Midland, passed away on January 20th. A visitation will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, January 26th, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. The family will have a private graveside service. David Evans was born September 14, 1977, in Houston, to Michael and Jenny Evans. David is survived by his wife, Valley Evans, his son, Noah Evans, his parents, his sister, Angie Evans, his in-laws, John and Linda Shoemake, and his sister-in-law, Lisa Fender, and her husband, Barry, and their children, his brother-in-law, Cody Shoemake, and his wife, Rhonda, and their child, his sister-in-law, Dusty Padilla, and her son, Eli. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Wounded Warrior Project or Midland Humane Coalition. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ronald Jason Irwin was born to C.J. Irwin and Violet Mae Dooley Irwin in 1934. Ron was married to Jean Jackson. They had three sons, Jack Irwin and wife Lavonda, Chet Irwin and wife Lisa, and Doug Irwin and wife Christy. Ron was preceded in death by his parents and his brother, Gerald Irwin, and his wife Myrtle, and his sister Mary Lee Irwin Presley and her husband Clark Presley. Surviving him are several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Memorial service for family and close friends will be held at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, January 28th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Live streaming will be available at www.npwelch.com at 10:30 a.m. Memorials may be made to a charity of your choice. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Deborah Williams, 66, of Midland, passed away January 10th. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, January 27th at 10 a.m. at First Christian Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Julie Ann Preston, 79, of Odessa, passed away on January 18th at Midland Medical Lodge in Midland. Julie was born on May 4th, 1941, to Frederick and Margaret Catherine Scotton Thompson in Portland, Oregon. She is survived by one daughter, Alicia K. Spencer, and husband Kenneth. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Leonard Ray Walden, 84, of Odessa, passed from this life on January 17th. He was born to Cecil and Susan Walden on September 1st, 1936, in Caney, Texas. He is survived by his children, Adrian Mercer, Jeffrey Walden, and Daniel Walden, and two siblings. There will be interment services held at a later date in Atoka, Oklahoma. Ngoc Tram Thai Nguyen, 73, of Odessa, passed away on January 19th at her home in Odessa. Ngoc was born on September 21, 1947, to Kach and He Thai Dang in Saigon, Vietnam. She is survived by her spouse, Trail Nguyen Ngoc, of Odessa. 6 children and 11 grandchildren. A viewing will be held on Saturday, January 30th, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Terry Lloyd Stewart, 82, of Alpine, passed away on January 13th at Ashton Medical Lodge in Midland. Terry was born on December 1, 1938, to Kenneth Ernest and Blanche Ardell Ridnour in Winston, Arizona. He is survived by his spouse, Charlotte Bell Stewart. Terry, of Alpine, Texas. 3 children and 3 grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 26th, 2021. Stop the spread, wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. New fire station on agenda. Cost is almost $6 million for new Northeast station located off Grandview. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council today will discuss and consider approving a $5,875,000 contract with Midtex of Midland Incorporated to construct the city's new fire station number 9. The 6 p.m. City Council meeting will be held virtually on the WebEx platform that can be accessed through the city's website. The council's agenda detailed that officials will discuss details of the fire station project today, including a proposed start date. The construction company's proposed contract with the city, Midtex of Midland Incorporated, details that the project would be completed within 330 days. Council members heard details about the project on January 19th during a virtual work session. The new station will be just off Grandview near Buffalo Wild Wings. Midtex of Midland Incorporated was one of 9 companies that submitted bids for the job. The Midland-based company submitted the lowest bid, according to city bid sheets. Council is also expected to approve a $10,000 donation from Occidental Petroleum Corporation to Odessa Fire Rescue to purchase bunker gear for suppression personnel. Council is also expected to accept 2 Walmart grants totaling $7,000. Those funds will be used to pay for training and training-related equipment by Odessa Fire Rescue. COVID-19 vaccine traffic. Drivers line up outside of Ratliff Stadium as they wait to receive the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine as part of a mass vaccination clinic organized by the City of Odessa, Odessa Fire Rescue, the Odessa Police Department, and Medical Center Hospital Monday morning at Ratliff Stadium. Officials said more than 1,500 were vaccinated on Sunday. Immunizations a court concern. Commissioners move ahead with Sheriff's 27 Tahoes. OA News at OAOA.com. In a time of heightened medical concerns, Ector County Commissioners today will hear Health Department Director Randy Garcia's request to contract with the Texas Department of State Health Services to provide immunizations of all types for the rest of this fiscal year. The item will entail consideration of a yearly interlocal application for immunization program funds. This does not include COVID vaccinations, Administrative Assistant Debbie Clay said. In a related item during the 10 a.m. meeting at the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, the court will discuss any COVID-19 related issues that department heads or medical officials may broach. Other business will include Sheriff Mike Griffith's presentation on the purchase of 27 Chevrolet Tahoes with special law enforcement equipment, for which the court okayed a $2.5 million expenditure last August. Griffiths said then that when the Tahoes are delivered in the spring or summer, they will allow all 40 of his patrol deputies to take their vehicles home, and that the vehicle's longevity will be greatly enhanced, with only one officer driving each one. The court will also hear District Attorney Dusty Gallivan's proposal to store evidence in Hangars 4, 5, and 6 at the Slaymeyer Field Airport north of town. Consider seeking $467,068 from One Beacon Government Risks for architects' fees incurred in roof replacements in 53 locations related to hail damage on March 28th and June 14th, 2017. Review bids for the county's bank depository contract. Consider an interlocal agreement with Linn County, south of Lubbock, for Linn County inmates to be housed in the expanded Ector County Detention Center. Review Garcia's proposal to start grant public health nurses at Step 4, or $24.40 per hour. Discuss making a $1,125 transfer from general fund postage to the tax assessor's office for insurance. Consider transferring $205 from the Educational Travel Fund to Court at Law No. 2 for professional dues and fees. Review transferring $4,715 from county legal fees to the self-funded automobile liability insurance fund. Consider making payment number 5 to Johnson Controls, which is about one-third finished with its $6.9 million contract to upgrade lights and heating, air conditioning in county buildings, including the replacement of all 87 Freon air conditioning units, the replacement of all lights with light-emitting diodes, and the installation of 2 chillers at the courthouse. Discuss allocating $35,340 from the sales tax fund for special environmental equipment, and review transferring $600 from the unreserved fund balance for the purchase of office supplies. Consider moving $12,543 from the unreserved fund balance to the general fund for software maintenance. Antibody testing adds to MCH lab services by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Photo: blood in collection tubes rest on top of an Abbott Architech analyzer after being tested for antibodies last Monday at Medical Center Hospital. According to MCH's Divisional Director of Laboratory Services, Tara Ward, MCH has tested approximately 1,000 patients for antibodies since May 2020. Patients can be recommended by their physician or pay $20 for the testing of antibodies. Ward suggests patients to wait until they have received both doses of the COVID-19 vaccine before being tested. Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Medical Center Hospital's regional lab started antibody testing for COVID-19 in late May, and almost 1,000 people have taken advantage of the service. Tara Wood is the Divisional Director of Laboratory Services at Medical Center Health System, and Deborah Vessels is Regional Lab Supervisor. Wood said it's best to test people who have been diagnosed with and treated for COVID. Or now that the vaccinations are coming out, if they've had vaccination, they can do a test a few weeks after their last dose to see if they've created the antibody, and then it can also just be used as a screen for those who want to see if they've been exposed but never developed symptoms, Wood said. The benefit, she said, is mostly for epidemiological study, and so people know if they have been exposed to the virus. According to the medical journal BMJ, quote, epidemiology is the study of how often diseases occur in different groups of people and why. Epidemiological information is used to plan and evaluate strategies to prevent illness and as a guide to the management of patients in whom disease has already developed. Wood said it's unclear whether you have to have both doses of the vaccine before you get tested. We're not really sure about the vaccine, how much of the antibody is produced with the first dose, so it's probably best to get both doses of the vaccine and then wait to make sure that you're responding and creating the antibodies, Wood said. There's just so much up in the air that this is kind of all uncharted territory, and we just don't know. The results of the tests have to be reported to the health department, and they are supposed to report it to the state health department so they can see if there was a spike or an outbreak somewhere, Wood said. Wood said they have probably tested almost 1,000 people for antibodies since MCH opened its direct-to-consumer testing program at the lab at 315 Golder Avenue. People can come and get it without a physician's order, she said. We are getting quite a few people coming in and requesting that and just getting tested that way, just to satisfy their own curiosity. Vessels said antibody testing doesn't replace COVID testing. It's better to go ahead and get the PCR for diagnosis if you feel that you've been exposed or have come in contact with somebody that is positive. Then yes, PCR testing is definitely the best way to get that confirmed, Vessels said. The antibody test is a blood draw, Wood said. Vessels said the test costs $20 and doesn't need a physician order. If they come in with a written order from their physician, then we will file insurance and do all that. The $20 is just for the no physician order, Wood said. People don't need to get a vaccine before they are tested. Wood said a big part of why they started antibody testing was for convalescent plasma donations to treat COVID patients. The theory was that if they had COVID and developed antibodies, then we could send them to the blood center to have, they could donate their plasma, and it would be for convalescent plasma, and then we could use that plasma to treat other COVID patients, Wood said. Wood and Vessels said the pandemic has been a learning experience for them, partly because these tests didn't exist before. It's been a learning experience all the way around, having to bring in a test that didn't exist before last February and having to get it to a level that inspired confidence and made sure we all knew what we were doing. It's been a huge struggle, but I think it's hopefully on the downhill slide, Wood said. Vessels said she's constantly asking Wood questions that she may not know the answer to. It's all new, Vessels said. You want to know everything about it, or try to. Even the people that know don't know. Wood added that they don't have the benefit of looking back because this is a new disease. It's uncharted territory, Vessels said. Wood said the lab is part of the hospital and it conducts tests across all departments. We actually saw a decrease in the number of tests around the time COVID hit last summer and fall, Wood said. The laboratory in general didn't take as big a hit as some other departments because we have outreach to several nursing homes and outpatient clinics, but we did see a little bit decrease in volume. It's starting to go back up. As they reopened, we saw more people coming back, but we could kind of also follow that trend. As things opened, we would get more COVID testing coming back again. Kind of that double-edged sword related to the reopening. On the net, tinyurl.com/y23hnfe6. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County numbers are not updated daily. ECISD daily cases, 8 students, 12 staff. U.S. cases, 25,018,520 total confirmed, and 417,936 deaths. Find out more at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/ TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine through the drive-through clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. Clinic hours will be from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. today through Friday. Clinic is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B most at risk and for ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for a quicker on-site processing. For those that are not able to register online, will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short sleeve clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers@odessa-tx.gov. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/Y3JQHZ89. Walgreens are expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. For more updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/Y3LNW83. HEB has requested more COVID-19 vaccine from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. 361 days. For 361 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Closing prices index posted $49.25, futures $52.77, natural gas $2.602. Benchmark U.S. rose 50 cents to $52.77 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 26th, 2021. Local news. OC to pay tribute to Abalos. OA News at OAOA.com. A tribute to Richard Abalos, a longtime member of the Odessa College Board of Trustees and Odessa attorney, will be part of the board's virtual gathering set for 6 p.m. Tuesday. Abalos died December 12, 2020, at age 77. He had been a member of the OC board since 2002 and an attorney in private practice for 49 years. The tribute will be provided by OC President Greg Williams. Some of the other items on the agenda are a review of the mission statement, the Health Science Building naming agreement, the Wood Family Foundation Incorporated committed to a $5 million contribution to Odessa College to help fund the construction of a new $39.7 million health sciences building. OC will name the 83,000 square foot, four-story building the Wood Health Sciences Building. News, December news release from OC said. An education report on graduation, OC2UTPB, a teacher preparation program, and BAAS, Bachelor of Applied Arts and Sciences, will be provided. Chief of Staff Robert Rivas will present an institutional effectiveness report. The President's report from Williams includes the 2021 Odessa College Learning Summit, Spring 2021 registration efforts, COVID-19 vaccines in the Permian Basin, and welcoming back campus residents. Meeting information. The board meeting may be viewed online, and members of the public may access this meeting as follows. Webinar ID 919-3094-4208. Passcode 537766. Dial in 1-346-248-7799. Those who wish to address the board about an item on the agenda must submit their name via email to awarren@odessa.edu prior to the meeting. The video conference will allow for two-way communication when your name is called. If you have submitted your information prior to the meeting, your name will be called to speak during public comments. On the net, tinyurl.com/yxbv5n7n. Local news roundup. Free clothes closet. Sherwood Church of Christ, 4900 North Dixie Boulevard, offers free clothing on the first Saturday of every month. With so many families in the community are losing their jobs due to COVID and the downturn in oil, the Sherwood Clothes Closet is an opportunity for people to find needed clothing items for the entire family. Hours are 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Masks are required to comply with city orders and to protect each other from spreading the virus. Empty Bowls Fundraiser. West Texas Food Bank has scheduled 2021 Empty Bowls Fundraiser from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at the new Innovative Gardens at the Midland facility, 1601 West Cliff Drive, Midland. Tickets, $15 per person, includes the handmade ceramic bowl. For tickets or information, visit www.eventbrite.com/e/empty-bowls-2021-tickets-1-299-338-640-355. OA News at oaoa.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.